हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 51, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Chapter 13, Five Potent Forms of Devotional Service. So then, Nine Limbs of Bhakti. Srila Prabhupada writes in Chapter 14 of Nectar of Devotion, Sri Rupa Goswami affirms herein that there are nine different kinds of devotional service, which are listed as hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshipping the deity in the temple, praying, carrying out orders, serving Krishna as a friend, and sacrificing everything for him. Each and every one of these processes is so powerful that if anyone follows even a one single one of them, he can achieve the desired perfection without fail. A. Srila Prabhupada's purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.23.24. Sri Prahlad Uvacha. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smarnam Padasevanam Archanam Bandhanam Dasyam Sakyam Atmani Vedanam Iti Pum Sarpita Vishnau Bhaktis Chen Nava Lakshana Kriyeta Bhagavat Yadhat An Manye Dita Ditam Uttamam. Prahlad Maharaj said, hearing and chanting about the transcendental holy name, form, qualities, paraphernalia, and pastimes of Lord Vishnu, remembering them, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, offering the Lord respectful worship with 16 types of paraphernalia, offering prayers to the Lord, becoming His servant, considering the Lord one's best friend, and surrendering everything unto Him, in other words, serving Him with the body, mind, and words. These nine processes are accepted as pure devotional service. One who has dedicated his life to the service of Krishna through these nine methods should be understood to be the most learned person, for he has acquired complete knowledge. Right? So the whole Vedic literature is all to bring you to this point. That's why the material world is there, because the living entity's natural position is in the spiritual world. Those who haven't taken that as the option, then they come to the material world, but then they're given the opportunity to come to that position, right? Because that's what you're supposed to know. You're supposed to understand this. So all the various branches of knowledge, all these different things are just there for the purpose that they attract and engage the, you know, body, mind, and words of the living entities in the material world, but it's trying, you know, for in their interest to the secondary aspects of Krishna's creation. The idea being is that engaging in those, you'll connect that to the Lord, and at one point you will take up this knowledge. That's why this is the most learned person. So he's acquired complete knowledge. Right? Because once you understand about Krishna, right, his person, his pastimes, that's complete knowledge. Because knowledge of just the jnana and kriya shaktis and what they do, that's not complete knowledge. That's it'd be like someone who knows the in and out of the kitchen, how big each kitchen counter is, you know, what's the thickness of each one of them, what it's made out of, what's the molecular, you know, I mean, how you breaking down this, you know, the body structure of what minerals are in it and what they do and all this and that and a whole thing on that. They can go into this for days on that, like that. And then, you know, what paint was on the wall and what was made and what company and what's the history of that company and all these things like that. And then there's the little, you know, the little latch thing for the window and where that come from, and, you know, who invented that and then what changes it went through and what revolutions happened because of that and changes in the whole, you know, history of the world over that. And all these things like this, but they have no idea about cooking. Not nothing. Not one little bit. Right? Would we say that they have knowledge? That's the point. That's why. Now, we're not saying that those person is not super intelligent and very thorough in their studies and very deep and very committed, but that's not what a kitchen's for. So in the same way as we come into the material world, it's meant to revive our service to Krishna. So people become great scholars and academics and professionals and, you know, greatly, you know, controlling the whole, the, you know, everything in the world and can do all kinds of things in mystic cities and whatever it is. But that's not what it's for. The material world's not for that. It's for developing love for Krishna. Therefore, someone who has dedicated his life to the service of Krishna through these nine methods should be understood to be the most learned person. Right? Because learned means you actually have the proper knowledge. Yes. For he has acquired complete knowledge. You understand? So that's why the acharyas make comments about scholars and other people like this. They get so distracted that they don't even know what it's for. Mm-hmm. It's just knowledge to know knowledge. You know, and then there's the practical ones. It's just kriya to, because it gets something done. Does that make sense?
But actually, when the jiva is coming to the material world, he doesn't know why.
No. But because he doesn't want to know. He had the opportunity. If you're sitting in the spiritual position,
yes.
And you're not interested,
yes.
Then, you know, what to do? So you have to... So what is the interest? The interest is in Krishna's energies. So you come to the material world and everybody simply is focused on these energies. So then some focus on them from karma, some from jnana. Right? Some are more sentimental, some are less, some are more practical, some are not. Some are more efficient, some are not. You know, like that, you know. Like that. Some are optimistic, some are pessimistic. You know, so all these different kind of elements are there, and that way then everybody try, you know, gives it their best shot. But this is the actual thing. Does that make sense? That's actually what it's for. Purport. When Prahlad Maharaj was asked by his father to say something from whatever he had learned, he considered that what he had learned from a spiritual master was the best of all teachings.
Mm-hmm.
From whatever he had learned, he considered... to say something from whatever he had learned. Whereas, what he had learned about diplomacy from his teacher, Sundamarka, was useless. Oh, from a spiritual master, okay. To say something from whatever he had learned. He considered that what he had learned from a spiritual master was the best of all teachings. Okay, we need a comma there. Whereas, what he had learned about diplomacy from his material teachers, Shanda and Amarka, was useless. Bhakti, pare shanu bhavo viraktir anyatra cha. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.42. This is the symptom of pure devotional service. A pure devotee is interested only in devotional service, not in material affairs. To execute devotional service, one should always engage in hearing and chanting about Krishna or Lord Vishnu. The process of temple worship is called archana. How to perform archana will be explained herein. One should have complete faith in the words of Krishna, who says that he is the great well-wishing friend of everyone, Suridam Sarva Bhutanam, Bhagavad Gita 5.29. A devotee considers Krishna the only friend. This is called sakyam. Pumsar Pita Vishnau, the word Pumsa, means by all living entities. There are no distinctions permitting only a man or only a Brahmin to offer devotional service to the Lord. Everyone can do so. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 9.32, Striyo Vaishyas Tata Shudras Te Pi Yanti Param Gatim. Although women, Vaishyas, and Shudras are considered less intelligent, they also can become devotees and return home back to Godhead. After performing sacrifices, sometimes a person engaged in fruitive activity customarily offers the results to Vishnu. But here it is said, Bhagavat Yadha, one must directly offer everything to Vishnu, rather than I'm doing my sacrifice for my own material purpose. And then having done that, I offer the results to Vishnu, right? But here it's customarily. You know, it's because that's what the ritual dictates. But here it says, no, it should be directly offered to the Lord. Right? That you're doing that activity to please the Lord. That's the reason. Right? This is called sannyas, not merely nyas, right? Nyas then means that you're giving the results, but sannyas means that's complete. Right? It's complete. A tridandi sannyasi carries three dandas, signifying maya, kaya, mano, bhakya. Body, mind, and words. All of these should be offered to Vishnu. And then one can begin devotional service. Fruit of workers must first perform some pious activities and then formally or officially offer the results to Vishnu. The real devotee, however, first offers his surrender to Krishna with his body, mind, and words, and then uses his body, mind, and words for the service of the Lord as Krishna desires. Right? So they're taking it up here, surrendering, and then in that surrendered state, engaging everything connected to Krishna, rather than you're doing your own thing and then offering it to Krishna.
But this is the symptoms, body, mind, and word of the Atmanivedana surrender.
It's just saying that this is the mood of the devotee,
yes.
The real devotee.
Because it was said in the 9, in the verse of Bhagavatam, it's serving the Lord with the body, mind, and word. So how can we serve, for example, for the devotee who are only
body, not mind and words, or only mind but not body and words, or only words but not body and mind.
Yes,
yes, I talk a lot about devotion. I never do it and never think about it, but I talk a lot about it, so at least I got one thing.
The future.
Yes, the future. We're planning to add in the mind next.
But hearing, for example, how can we engage the body, mind, and word in hearing?
It means that they're all engaged, so whichever one is the one to be used is being used for Krishna.
Yes.
There's never a time when it's not being used.
Yes.
Like when you're hearing something, then you're hearing, so you may not be engaging other aspects
yes.
of the body, but because that's the one that's being engaged, that's the one that's connected to Krishna.
Yes.
So it's not that while you're hearing, then you also must be, you know, playing on mridanga, singing a song at the same time, and playing the kartals between your knees or something, you know, so you don't have to do that. It's just a matter of whatever is being engaged. If it's an activity of the body's engaged in Krishna service. The activity of the mind's engaged. The activity of the words are engaged. So, that makes sense. So we see is that that's the point we're trying to have that attitude. But as Prabhupada opened the whole discussion, is that if anyone follows any one of these nine, but that means then the body, mind, and words is engaged in that one particular service. So it's all about hearing about Krishna, or all about chanting, or all about like this. Like we see, Sukadev Goswami, he's just engaged in chanting. Parikshit Maharaj is just engaged in hearing. And so in this way, then they become perfect.
Vishnu Maharaj had in his party one brahmachari to wash dishes, and he had some kind of a mechanical arrangement by means of which he could keep a photograph and tie the sticks to his neck. He should keep a photograph like this and wash the dishes, and then he's there.
So and the point is?
Same thing, doing two things at the same time, serving.
Oh, yeah, no, yes,
and remembering.
Yeah. I think that it was a harmonica stand.
Oh,
you know, because they're made like that to hold a harmonica. Instead of holding a harmonica, he put a picture of Krishna so he'd only see Krishna and no Maya. But he probably couldn't see the pots either, so he wasn't doing a great job. So. Yeah, the point is that these things are not. The point that the person will get eternal benefit for having done that. But at the same time, is, you know, there's a recommendation to keep yourself involved and engaged. You know, so you want to see that, okay, his senses are there, but what about the mind? What about the, you know, like that? So it's just a matter of you're trying very much to follow the directions that are given by the acharyas and keep yourself busy. So But in any case, whatever one does, that they'll always have that benefit, and it will come back later. So, you know, whether that, you know, individual has come back or if not, then next lifetime you'll take it up. Like this, it's just, it'll always continue. Okay. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives the following explanation is tatya. The word shravana refers to giving oral reception to the holy name and descriptions of the Lord's form, qualities, entourage, and pastimes, as explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and similar authorized scriptures. After orally receiving such messages, one should memorize these vibrations and repeat them, kirtanam. Smaranam means trying to understand more and more about the Supreme Lord. Because then you learn more, you know more, you remember more. And Padasevana means engaging oneself in serving the lotus feet of the Lord, according to the time and circumstances. Archanam means what's available, what service is available, that you're practically doing. You know, it's connected, whatever is connected with the Lord, you're doing that. Cleaning the temple, or taking care of guests, or anything like that. Archana means worshipping Lord Vishnu as one does in the temple. And Vandana means offering respectful obeisances. Manmana bhava mad pakto mad yaji mam namaskuru. Bhagavad Gita 1865. Vandana means namaskuru, offering obeisances or offering prayers. Thinking oneself to be Nitya Krishna Das, everlastingly a servant of Krishna, is called Dasyam. Right, because it's an attitude of that service. Right, so because somebody says, "Oh, but so many are rendering service or that," but it just means it's that attitude of everlastingly a servant of Krishna. That's the mood of that. And Sakya means being a well-wisher of Krishna. Krishna wants everyone to surrender unto him because everyone is constitutionally his servant. Therefore, as a sincere friend of Krishna, one should preach this philosophy, requesting everyone to surrender unto Krishna. So you're doing Krishna's work, what Krishna likes. Right? So we see is that you're trying to get to this kind of thing. And then Atmanivedanam means offering Krishna everything, including one's body, mind, intelligence, or whatever one may possess. So you see it's going from starting to hear about Krishna, you're having that natural, giving that oral reception, you're happy with that. Then you start to, you memorizing that, you say that to others, then to increase that, then you start learning more about the Lord so that you can be absorbed and then you can discuss that with others. Right? You're doing what's practical for Krishna, you're offering obeisances and prayers to Krishna. Does that make sense? You're worshiping in the temple according to what's mentioned there. So always seeing oneself as a servant of Krishna, and then you see is that then going to even more is that sincere friend. So it should preaching the philosophy and engaging it, but Atmanivedanam, including one's body, mind, intelligence. So it's about the mentality about how I am Krishna's. I am the servant of Krishna. Right? That aspect. Everlastingly a servant of Krishna. So this mood is what's there. So one is giving up unfavorable situations of identifying with the gross and subtle body. Because those are based on the false ego. When the false ego becomes more. So in other words, you have false ego, which means I'm making decisions based on what maintains this ego. Right? And so now when that becomes more gross, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, then you have, that turns into intelligence, where then you analyze your options, right? And then that has to be applied, these things, or you have to get information or apply information. Then when it gets more gross, it takes on the quality of the mind, which contacts the senses. You understand? So this is the subtle body. So we see here is that there's that mood, the constitutionally servant of Krishna. So as the consciousness takes up that grossness of false identity, it takes on that quality of chitta, meaning the impure consciousness, rather than the original chitta or the original consciousness, right? In other words, we have an original spiritual body, spiritual mind, spiritual consciousness, all this. Right? So we're trying to make it go the other way. We're using means doing what's the needful, right? Engaging yourself in serving the Lord is to be the Lord according to the time and circumstances. So what is the time? We're in this time. We're in this body. We have these abilities. We're engaging that. But it's not about those things. It's about identifying as Krishna's servant, as Krishna's friend, as that full surrender. Does that make sense? So we have to be willing to give up the upadis. Right? We're working with them, but we give up the upadis. We have to give up that identification that we are this, we are that, therefore, oh, I can only do this, I can only do that. In the beginning, yes, you can use that as a beginning stage. It's a neophyte stage. It should be very clear. It's a neophyte stage. The Madhyamas, it's already clear that this is the conditioned nature. I engage this in Lord Krishna's service. So it's not an identity. Though they may be comfortable with that position. You know, whatever's the nature are and those engagements. But it's not an identity. So this weakness of identifying with the gross and subtle body and then trying to adjust Krishna consciousness around that, that is the beginning stages of neophyte. It's not even the advanced stage, because the advanced stage is anartha nivritti. Right? Bhajana kriya means you're following according to the acharyas. I have faith, I associate, but I'm not necessarily committed to, that's the most beginning stage. Then, you know, they say, you know, the more advanced kanista, then they'll take up the process as is recommended. Then anartha nivritti means you're trying to get rid of all these attachments and distractions that are there. That then brings you to the beginning stage of the madhyama. Right? Then the madhyama is stable and steady. Then by that, being careful, then the middle stage comes taste, and then the advanced stage, attachment. Right? That brings you to the beginning stage of bhava. Right? So you just see it, you just continue. So maintaining that is always going to be a problem. And then, how you say, Krishna will reciprocate. So then we're not trying to move forward in pure devotion, so Krishna reciprocates. But the problem is Krishna reciprocates in kind. So wherever our identity and attachments are, that's where the reciprocation will be. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that then one will remain in that position. One won't move forward. So that's the difficulty. So that's why we see here Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is summarizing this all up. Then we see that those last stages, from the beginning, there's always the aspect of absorption. We see these last ones, the mentality is what is the dynamic element. So we always have to be aware that this is what we're dealing with. So we may start in these beginning stages, and that's where one starts. But one can't maintain that and claim that it's a bona fide path to maintain those, you know, means, in other words, Shraddha and Sadhu Sangha, but I won't really get serious about Bhajana Kriya because it doesn't match my anartas. And I'm not going to give up my anartas because I am my anartas. And then to say that this is a bona fide path of, you know, it's a beginning stage, but is never, ever called pure devotion. It's part of sadhana bhakti. But as soon as you start identifying in that, now you're cultivating the weeds. Right? And these weeds then will grow and choke the creeper. Does that make sense? So we have to be very careful that we're avoiding that kind of element. Because the whole point is that full serenity, body, mind, and intelligence. Because it's not our body, our mind, or intelligence. We have to remember is that whatever upadis we have, they're all part of the universal form. Right? It means there's unlimited, you know, as it says in the Purusha Shukta, unlimited hands, arms, feet, noses, ears, whatever it is. There's unlimited forms, and by your karma, you have the karma for this ear. So then that's brought this nose, that's brought this kind of eyes, these eyebrows, these kind of toenails, this many toes, you know, everything like that. It all goes on. and all that is brought is from that whole, you know, universal thing, and then put together. And now we're saying, oh, this is us, and, you know, we have to behave according to this. But the point is, we forget that it's not ours. It's Krishna's universal form. Krishna's letting us use it. It's our quota. And he'll reciprocate with us according to how we use it. So if we claim it's ours or attached to it, then we'll just continue on in that, whatever is that progression. But if we want to go back to Godhead, then we see that it's all Krishna's, and therefore we're trying to engage it according to Krishna's desire in his service, not our desire. Okay? We don't want to project. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let us say, in the intellectual sphere, that you have those who are a bit wary about religion. Now, when you talk about, let's say, God is a person and all these different things, their whole idea is you're projecting on God your nature. And therefore, they don't take it seriously. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, basically speaking, all intellectuals look down their nose at this kind of mentality. Right? So, we should be very careful about taking this exact same mentality and applying it in Krishna consciousness. That whatever we are and whatever our upadis are, we project that onto Krishna, and Krishna must be doing that because what I'm doing is so fabulous, so Krishna is the best and I'm the best, so Krishna must be doing what I'm doing because great minds think alike. You understand? So you're taking what's rejected by the modern academy, and then we're taking that as a foundation of a philosophy to establish our own process of sadhana bhakti. And then claiming it's intellectual and universal. No? This is the power of Maya. Her covering potency is so powerful that we don't even notice. She makes black look like white, white look like black. That is avidya shakti. It can make you really not intelligent. Right? As what was it? The verse this morning. Oh, idiots. You know, I forget who was making the point. Huh? Rupa Goswami. Yes. He's making the oh, idiots. You know, so. Yes.
Like how you compared the intellectuals of the West, looking down upon this mentality. All of these theories that they have about everything, what we have always been discussing, no respectable professor, no respectable statesman, no respectable CEO, no $100,000 a year earning computer coder guy will ever take these people seriously.
No, you can't, because the point is you're basing it on a lack of culture. A lack of ability. In other words, if you take a xenophobic position as your philosophy and then try to support that, immediately anybody who's a little bit intellectual and a little bit liberal in their thinking will not find it, because we're supposed to be able to accommodate. So just as we may be saying, okay, they shouldn't impose on us, but we can't impose on them. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point is we have to be very, very careful that we don't get distracted by taking it that the secondary is the actual important point. It's the primary that's important, but we can't then use that as a basis of the philosophy to establish the secondary is important. See, it's not about the secondary, it's the primary. Therefore, it doesn't matter the secondary. So therefore, we can kick out the Vedic, but we'll be totally solidly and completely focused on, you know, how you say, that one-pointed determination, you know, nishta in modern, you know, social constructs. You can't do that. If it's about the primary, it means none of these are the main thing. And since none of them are the main thing, then, but you have to use something, so what do you use since it's not about that? And we wouldn't want to speculate, so we use what the acharyas give us. Then that's why it says the safe path, the sure path, is following the acharyas. Does that make sense?
It's a difficult case to always follow. sometimes we follow, sometimes after we feel.
Yes, well, that's just the beginning. Is sometimes we follow, sometimes we don't, then we follow. That's the meaning of not being stable.
Yes.
That in the Narta Nivriti, that stage, the second stage, of it means there's six stages in a Narta Nivriti that one needs to get over. And so the second stage means sometimes we're very enthusiastic and sometimes we're not. Right? It's called thick thin. Right? You know. So sometimes we're right there, and other times, like this. But the point is you keep going and then it'll start to become steady. Then when that becomes steady, now that form is steady, but now the mind will be, well, you know, we could do it this way, we could do it that way. You know, we don't have to be so renounced, but then being renounced is good, but we don't have to be in the, like this. And then at some point it goes, I just want to get over Maya.
Yes, yes.
So then we go to that. Then when it's about, now it's not as, one is now fixed in the idea of being Krishna conscious. But whether one can nicely follow the sadhana or not. The other one, you're following the sadhana. When the mentality is good, then the mentality is not good, we're not following. This one, the mentality is always good, but because it's a beginning stage of this more proper mentality, sometimes we're very steady in the secondary forms of it, and sometimes we're not. Then the third of that we become, which is the sixth. But in other words, we're taking it when we decide to, you know, this is it, we're
yes.
No more Maya.
Yes.
We're taking that. The fourth, fifth, and sixth is one group, and the first, second, and third is one group. So when we get to that, now we are stable, we are steady, we're getting results.
Yes.
But from getting results, there's also those results, then we can get distracted by that.
Yes.
The material facilities that comes along with devotional service, we get distracted. So we have to avoid getting distracted. Then we get past that. That brings us then beyond the Narta Nivriti. Right? So to be fixed means we've come to, you know, basically 75%. We've removed that. So it's the prominence. There's always something that will go on until Bhava. Right? Then it's gone, except there's still a fragrance. And then with time, that fragrance goes by associating with the devotees.
Maharaj, the most difficult situation is an Atanihiti.
Yes, because that's starting right, you know, from where it's, you know, right from that beginning and going all the way through until the latter stages, basically, can say of Bhava. It's when that's completely clear. It means, in other words, when it's clear enough, you become steady in devotional service. So when it's cleared more, where one doesn't have any material desires or anything,
yes.
then that will bring you to Sarup.
Yes.
Like that. But then it has to be focused just on Krishna. Right? You may not have any material, but you may not also have any spiritual desires or transcendental desire. So it has to be that it's about Krishna. When that comes, that's Sarup Siddhi. Right? Because now you can take part in the Lord's pastimes. Then, by practicing that, then that comes to Sarup Siddhi. I mean, Krishna Vastu Siddhi. Right? So then one now is qualified to inherit one's natural position in the service to the Lord. So you come to the platform of prema. Right? So you see, is the same principles are going all the way through. These six anartas, you can take them and apply them at any point in the smaller circle. Everything goes through that. Even you want to do anything material, even you want to ride a bicycle, it will go through these stages. Right, and it comes to the point that you're so good at riding the bicycle, you're there, you're not paying attention, you know, got your phone out, you're doing things, you're cool, and then you drop the phone or you hit it, you know, you go over, what do you call it, you know, run something over and fall off the bike. These things happen. This is just how someone purifies oneself of the positions, you know, of a particular unwanted thing. So one has to be willing to give up. That's the whole point. That's the meaning of that full surrender. Because on the bodily platform, the mental platform, the intellectual platform, one has given all that up. And so these are all the gross manifestations of the ego. So when the ego is completely about, I am servant of Krishna, then these things go away. Okay? One sincere endeavor to perform these nine processes of devotional service is technically called bhakti. Right? So that sincere is called bhakti. If one's doing these processes as part of one's activities in karma, like it says, the fruit of workers, it's called bhakti. Right? Now, when you take up devotional service, we'll have an element of these fruit of workers or of the liberationists mixed into that beginning stages of devotional service. But because there is that, sincere endeavor to perform, therefore it's called bhakti. Right? Now one can say, oh, but that's not bhakti, but the acharyas make a distinction. When it's below prema, we call it bhakti. And from prema up, it's just called prema. So in other words, the mature form of bhakti is prema. So then, yes, they are practicing bhakti. Right? And then you have sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti. Right? And then you also prema bhakti, because it's all devotion. But it's just when it gets to that platform, generally it's just called prema. You don't say Mother Jashoda has bhakti. You say she has prema. Right? Does that make sense? But for a practitioner, you say he has bhakti. Then that's considered an ornament. So, it's just the terms are applied. The word adha means directly. Or one should not be like the karmis, who perform pious activities and then formally offer the results to Krishna. Right? So they're doing a pious activity, seen as a pious activity, and then they're offering that to Krishna. That is karmakanda. Right? One should not aspire for the results of his pious activities, but should dedicate oneself fully and then act piously. Right? So in other words, you're not taking piety and then offering it to Krishna, because it's your piety and your benefit. You're surrendering to Krishna and then acting piously. Right? So we see here, so therefore we can't take it as it's a bona fide process that I'm going to, define what is pious. I'm not even going to be using what the Vedas describe as pious. I'm going to make up my own system of what's pious. Right? And so then making that up, it's not actually based on a theistic model. It's based on mental speculation. And then one's going to say, that I'm going to offer to Krishna. So it's even a lesser offering than the karmis. And if the karmis are saying that that's not really the process, why would less than that be the process? So when it says it kicks out karma, which is manamoy, that means pranamoy and anamoy are already kicked out. Does that make sense? One should not aspire for the results of his pious activities, but should dedicate oneself fully and then act piously. In other words, one should act for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu, not for the satisfaction of his own senses. That is the meaning of the word adha, directly. It means it's about Krishna. Anyavilashita shunyam, jnana kamadyanavritam, anakulyena krishnanushilanam bhaktir uttama. Quote, one should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 19.167. One should simply satisfy Krishna without being influenced by fruit of knowledge or fruit of activity. The Gopal Tapani Upanishad says that the word bhakti means engagement in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not of anyone else, right? So you can't have bhakti towards the demigods or the family or country, because it's used like that. Sometimes you see in the contemporary society, they talk about it like this. But it just means Krishna. This Upanishad describes that bhakti is the offering of devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. To perform... Yes?
What is a proper word for someone who is worshipping the demigod? When somebody worships the deva...
It's called karmakanda. Or karma. In the contemporary, they'll just say puja. They're doing their puja. But, so, in other words, the elements of bhakti are written into the Vedas, So into the karma and jnana. So then the karmis are doing these activities that should be bhakti. That's why then the karmi can, according to the ritual, and you know, how you say, what do you say, officially, ceremoniously offer it to Krishna. So it's not actually so much as intent, it's just part of the ceremony. That it actually is something that you can offer, because bhakti's already been, the devotional process has already been written into karma and jnana. Does that make sense? So then, but they're not performing it with devotion in mind. So it's not called bhakti. And so then in that, then they can also, it can accommodate demigods and, you know, all these different aspects. And so then by being engaged in that, then it's not bhakti, though they're doing the activities of bhakti, because what else is there? Right? Means if this is a reflection of the spiritual world, what activities are there other than spiritual? Right? It's not that you have the spiritual world has its activities, and the material world has a completely different set. It's a reflection. You know, it's like, let's say you have, you know, I say, you have, okay. Thing that comes to mind, where are the workers? That works. Means that, you know, the children see the parents cooking. They go out in the backyard and they get some different things like this, and they start having pot and putting in that and stir it around and that. But into the pot, you know, it's a, you know, some plastic bowl or something, is going leaves and dirt and a few rocks and like that, and the stick is there, you know, the thing that they're stirring it around in. So it's the same activity, just the ingredients aren't as good. Right? Yeah. So that's the point. So it, there isn't something else. You know, if you're, the activities that are going on in the mirror are just a reflection of what's going on, you know, what's in front of the mirror. Because the mirror doesn't have separate activity. Right? Like that. Unless you've, I say, taken enough cocaine and you're writing a book, you know, like that. Then they may have other things that they do in there. But you see, is that they do the same thing there. It's just weird. So that's the fun of it. Right? Does that make sense? You know, instead of a croquet ball, they use a hedgehog. You know croquet?
No.
That was French. You have these little metal loops that you put into the ground, and you have a round wooden ball and a wooden mallet that then you hit. The mallet's very big, you can hit with both ends.
Yes.
They play it on the lawn.
Okay.
You don't have that?
No.
Because the spelling looks like croquette.
Cricket?
No. Not cricket. It's with a Q. No? Doesn't ring a bell. No one? Yeah.
Long time ago they used to play that.
Long time ago.
Like aristocracy.
Yeah, it's like that. So what I'm saying is that they would be playing it like that. But then when you go through the mirror, when in the reflection, then they're playing with flamingos instead of the mallets, and they're playing with hedgehogs instead of balls. No? But it's still the same game. So the whole point is the material world is just a reflection of there. There isn't separate activities. So that means karma and jnana can't have separate activities. Just the quality of ingredients, the quality of consciousness gets lower and lower. So it gets grosser and grosser. But you can't, the principal elements are always the same. That's why it says that the superior qualities of anything that can be offered to Krishna, because that's its origin, are those superior qualities. And then due to our consciousness, which is lower, it gets lower and lower. This means anything, or 2:11th canto-ish? No? Okay. To perform devotional service, one should be relieved of the bodily conception of life and aspirations to be happy through elevation to the higher planetary systems. So in other words, work performed simply for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord without any desire for material benefits is called bhakti. Bhakti is called, so you're doing something because it's pleasing to Krishna. It may have the uniqueness of the individual, but they're doing it to please Krishna. Like, let's say you have kirtan. Everybody who sings kirtan, each one will sing differently than the other. Except a few people, they will sing exactly like Achyutananda or exactly like Sri Prahlad, right? And some will sing like
Indra.
Yes, like that. So you have a few. I've even seen some who can sing like Shivarama. You know, get that, you know, that kind of roar, like that. Yeah.
Lokanath Maharaj.
Who?
Like Lokanath Maharaj.
Yeah, yeah. So some will sing like that. But the is that there? It's how you say? They're doing it to please Krishna. They're not expecting that afterwards then, you know, people will come up and give them money, or just the whole place will suddenly go into slow motion as it erupts into everyone's clapping and an ecstasy over what they've done, not over about the name of Krishna. You understand? They're doing it to please Krishna. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, don't forget also the flowers, showering and all that, yeah. So, that's what it means. It's called bhakti because it's just for, there's no other desire. Karmi is singing because he'll get some benefit from that.
Yeah. When a devotee tries to imitate, it's the result is.
Well, if they appreciate or that's it just matches their style, then it works. It's fine as long as they do a good job of it. You know, if they do a bad job, then not as good. Like that. Once we're going on the road, you sometimes see these old pictures of the Gaur Purnima festival when Prabhupada was here, and you see especially the one you see Achyutananda on the road and all the swamis and all that, you know, just coming back from the yoga peak. So coming back down that one time, then Achyutananda, because they were doing different kinds of things, is he was super intelligent, and from that he was also therefore super funny. You know, he used to use his intelligence like that. Kind of thing. So he started singing in a particular way and says, "Who's this?" You know, who's he imitating? And they said, "Well, it sounds like you." You know, like that. He says, No. I'm singing, what I'm singing is Madhavananda singing like me. Like that. You know, like that. So it was, yeah. So the whole idea is that the devotees are doing all these things. They're not doing it to please themselves. They're doing it to please Krishna. So it's not that when we say it's for Krishna, that it loses this individuality. But the point is there's nothing material to gain from that. There's no upadhi to maintain. Is that? In other words, work performed simply for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord without any desire for material benefits is called bhakti. Bhakti is also called nishkarma, or freedom from the results of fruit of activity. So that's why it's not pious activity, that's why you're not performing karma. The activity is the same. That's not because, oh, you're performing the activity of karma. No, karma is performing the activity of bhakti. They're doing it for the fruit of result, therefore it's called karma. Does that make sense? In other words, we have to understand is that devotional service is first.
Yes.
Then there's the reflection.
Yes.
Right? And then if we say, oh, you're doing like the reflection, you're not quite understanding how this works. Right?
It is coming more and more on the topic.
Yes. What you see is because they're trying to separate the two from each other. Because the point is, when you can separate the two, then you work with the primary and secondary harmoniously. Otherwise, if it's not separated, then that primary and secondary, sometimes there's a problem between it. We miss the primary, overemphasize the secondary, use the wrong secondary because it's not about the primary. Like that. Bhakti and nishkarma are on the same platform, although devotional service and fruit of activity appear almost the same. Right? So they almost look the same. Point is that the principle of it is the same. It means in the detail, it means of the ritual. But the purpose of it, that's where the difference is. Right? So instead of Krishna there, they may put a demigod there, but the whole concept and the whole ritual is basically the same principle. The 9 different processes enunciated by Prahlad Maharaj, who learned them from Narad Muni, may not all be required for the execution of devotional service. The devotee performs only one of these 9 without deviation. He can attain the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So without deviation means without going into mundane consciousness. It doesn't mean that he does that one alone and not another. And while he's doing Shravanam, but he also does Kirtanam, then that's it. His Shravanam's not going to work. No, we don't. Yeah. Sometimes it is found that when one performs one of the processes, other processes are mixed with it. That is not improper for a devotee. So that's why I'm making that not deviation means we don't deviate like the karmis, that their intent is material. When a devotee executes any one of the 9 processes, Navalakshana, this is sufficient. The other 8 processes are included. If you take any one, because to hear, then chanting must be involved. You're going to learn about Krishna, so you remember. You're going to apply that, so you're going to Upada Sevana. You're going to worship Krishna. You're going to offer prayers. You're going to try to see yourself as Krishna's servant. You're going to try to do things that please Krishna and surrender to Krishna. But it's centered around Shravanam. Right? Then if you go to Kirtanam, the same thing will apply, each one of you. Now let us discuss these 9 different processes. Right? So this is continuing from Prabhupada's purport in the 7th canto 1, Vlad Maharaj's instructions. Right? Of the entire Bhagavatam. Okay. Yeah? Here it is. Shravanam. Hearing the holy name of the Lord, Shravanam, is the beginning of devotional service. Although any one of the 9 processes is sufficient, in chronological order, the hearing of the holy name is the beginning. Indeed, it is essential, right? Because we're first going to hear about. Otherwise, how do we know what else is going on unless we've heard? Indeed, it is essential. As enunciated by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Cheto Darpa Namarjanam, Chaitanya Charitamrita Antilila 20:12, by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one is cleansed of the material conception of life, which is due to the dirty modes of material nature. When the dirt is cleansed from the core of one's heart, right? In other words, the modes of nature, one can realize the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha, Brahma Samhita 5:1. Thus, by hearing the holy name of the Lord, one comes to the platform understanding the personal form, right? Name, form, qualities, pastimes. So by hearing nicely, then the form of the Lord you're able to appreciate. When the dirt is cleansed from the core of one's heart, one can realize the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, by hearing the holy name of the Lord, one comes to the platform understanding the personal form of the Lord. After realizing the Lord's form, one can realize the transcendental qualities of the Lord. And when one can understand his transcendental qualities, one can understand the Lord's associates. Right? So it goes in that order. So sometimes we think, you know, I'm chanting, what should I be thinking about? You know, the form, the pastimes, his qualities, you know, which pastimes and like that. No, you just have to hear. Because if you hear, the others will manifest. You don't have to ask. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And when one can understand his transcendental qualities, one can understand the Lord's associates. Right? Because it's based on these qualities that they're interacting. In this way, a devotee advances further and further towards complete understanding of the Lord as he awakens in realization of the Lord's holy name, transcendental form, qualities, his paraphernalia, and everything pertaining to him. Therefore, the chronological process is Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnoham, Srimad Bhagavatam 7:5:23. This same process of chronological understanding holds true in chanting and remembering. When the chanting of the holy name, form, qualities, and paraphernalia is heard from the mouth of a pure devotee, his hearing and chanting are very pleasing. Srila Sanatana Goswami has forbidden us to hear the chanting of an artificial devotee or non-devotee, because then they're only dealing with the syllables of the name. There's no potency there. And the reason it takes on that quality, as you can say, is no, but it's still the name. The point is the chit potency is there, right? In the pure chanting. So in the impure chanting, then the achit potency is there. So by chanting that, they develop their material desire. Because it said that Krishna will fulfill all desires. Right? So that's why we, Sanatana Goswami forbids us to hear the chanting of the artificial devotee or non-devotee. Hearing from the text of Srimad Bhagavatam is considered the most important process of hearing. Srimad Bhagavatam is full of transcendental chanting of the holy name, and therefore the chanting and hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam are transcendentally full of mellows. The transcendental holy name of the Lord may be heard and chanted accordingly to the attraction of the devotee. One may chant the holy name of Lord Krishna, or one may chant the holy name of Lord Rama, or Nrisingadeva. Ramadi Murti Shukala Niyamena Tishtanna. Brahma Samhita 5:39. The Lord has innumerable forms and names, and devotees may meditate upon a particular form and chant the holy name according to his attraction. The best course is to hear of the holy name, form, and so on from a pure devotee of the same standard as oneself. In other words, one who is attracted to Krishna should chant and hear from other pure devotees who are also attached to Lord Krishna. Right? That's why it says similar, like-minded. The same principle applies for devotees attracted by Lord Ram, Lord Nrisimha, and other forms of the Lord, who associate with those who are have that mood. Because Krishna is like in Ayodhya, then they're all attracted to Ram. So that's the main thing there. Remember, was there with, I think, I'm not sure if it was one other devotee, two, very few, or a couple of, oh no, may have been a couple of more. May have been three or four like that, altogether. And we went, I think we were at Kumbh Mela, we went up to, while we were there, we went up to Ayodhya, because it's very close by. And we went to the temple and all that, and there's all the Ram Bhaktas there, and they're all quite big. You know, very, very solid devotees. You know, very happy, smiling, you know, very, very nice. And so then it was time, they invited us for shots, so we're all sitting down. You know, all, it means all these, you know, Ram Bhaktas are all sitting, and then us sitting there. And then the, you know, whoever's kind of like the, you know, the leading person there, he says, okay, so, how many here, you know, I say, are surrendered to, you know, how many, you know, something about, so that's, you know, worship Krishna and think Krishna is the best, like that, you know, and so you chant Hare Krishna, you know, like that, and so, you know, so then we chant, the three or four of us, right? You know, so we don't make that much noise. And then he says, and who was Ram? And then all the other, like 50 or 100, rah, like this, yeah. And then he turns to us and says, you know, kind of like, you know, Ram wins this round, right? Yeah. So, that's it. They associate together, and that's what they do. Right? Srimad Bhagavatam 1:328. It is best to hear about Lord Krishna's name, form, and pastimes from a realized devotee who's particularly attracted by the form of Lord Krishna. In Srimad Bhagavatam, great devotees like Sukadeva Goswami have specifically described Lord Krishna's holy name, form, and qualities. Unless one hears about the holy name, the form and qualities of the Lord, one cannot clearly understand the other processes of devotional service. Right? So unless you've heard, you can't then understand the rest, because it's all based on that proper understanding. And you've heard from proper source. Right? So that's then why Shravana says there's a chronological order. It's a natural development, but any one of them will work, yes. But you must start with hearing. You'll have had to have heard to do any of the others. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends that one chant the holy name of Krishna, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. One is fortunate enough to hear from the mouth of realized devotees, he is very easily successful in the path of devotional service. Therefore, hearing of the holy name, form, and qualities of the Lord is essential. So, yeah. Yeah, because you see is that Vyasadeva is written, and he's, you know, given that aspect, but it's not necessarily that he's given he's the authoritative person, but you still have to hear from the parampara. Because to approach Vyas, you have to hear from those who are between us and Vyas. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So, as we add in all these different devotees, and their, these great, you know, these pure devotees, and their realizations, then we see everything makes sense. Yes.
Okay? Maharaj, when we speak about hearing, it includes like reading.
Reading, yes.
Yes.
Reading, kirtan, discussions, anything the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord are being described. Like that. That's why here we're associating with these personalities. Like here we're reading Srila Prabhupada's purport, we're associating with Srila Prabhupada.
Yes.
So we're getting that benefit. We're hearing from them the proper attitude. Therefore, hearing of the holy name, form, and qualities of the Lord is essential. In Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.11, there is this verse. Tad vag vishvargo janatagha viplavo yasmin pratishlokam abhadhavat yapi naman yanantasya yason kitani yachrinvanti gayanti grinanti sadhava. Verses describing the name, form, and qualities of Anantadeva, the unlimited Supreme Lord, are able to vanquish all the sinful reactions of the entire world. Therefore, even if such verses are improperly composed, devotees hear them, describe them, and accept them as bona fide and authorized. Right? So it's not about the secondary aspect. As long as it's appreciated, they hear and describe that as authorized. That's why you see sometimes is that in you have a standard way that people do things. Right? Let's say amongst those who practice language, you know, they're good in language, you know, in grammar or things like that, then or vocabulary. There's a specific way people are using it. And as long as you work within that, they're happy. Now, even if you do something that's correct, that's outside of that, they're not happy. Right? So we see is that in performing their glorification of the Lord, and we see many times the acharyas are writing different things, speaking different things. Other, but it may generally you speak, see, it's done. It's in the standard ways of application. But sometimes you see they use applications that are not necessarily standard, but they're bona fide. And so we see the acharyas then explain how, you know, generally be used in this case, but it's used in that, and according to Panini, then it's bona fide, this, that, blah, blah. Does that make sense? So they're just pointing out that some would say this is improperly composed, but it's not. Because the main point is that if it's about Krishna, that's proper composition. And even if it's technically perfect, but it's not about Krishna, like the Digvijay Pandit, the Kashmiri Pandit, then it's 100 verses, but who cares? So that's why we accept what our acharyas and that say, and we couldn't care less what others say. Even though it may be technically, because some will say, oh, but here Prabhupada's saying this, but I read in this book that this scholar said this. It's like, who cares? It means literally. They don't care, so why should, you know, it's like he's saying, oh, but you have to be broad-minded. That guy who wrote it doesn't care. So why should we? Right? In this connection, Srila Swami has remarked that a pure devotee takes advantage of another pure devotee by trying to hear from him about the holy name, form, and qualities of the Lord. There is no such opportunity. He alone chants and hears the Lord's holy name. So if there's an opportunity to hear from others, he'll take that advantage. And if not, he'll sit and chant. Good. 2. Kirtanam. The hearing of the holy name has been described above. Now let us try to understand the chanting of the holy name, which is the second item in the consecutive order. It is recommended that such chanting be performed very loudly. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Narad Muni says that without shame, he began traveling all over the world, chanting the holy name of the Lord. Similarly, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has advised, Trinadapi sunichena, tarodapi sahishnuna, Amanina, Manadena, Kirtaniya, Sadahari, Chaitanya Charamita, Adi Lila, 17:31. A devotee can very peacefully chant the holy name of the Lord by behaving more humbly than the grass, being tolerant like a tree, and offering respects to everyone, without expecting honor from anyone else. Such qualifications make it easier to chant the holy name of the Lord. The process of transcendental chanting can be easily performed by anyone, even if one is physically unfit, classified lower than others, devoid of material qualifications, or not at all elevated in terms of pious activities. The chanting of the holy name is beneficial. An aristocratic birth, an advanced education, beautiful bodily features, wealth, and similar results of pious activities are all unnecessary for advancement in spiritual life. For one can very easily advance simply by chanting the holy name. It is understood from the authoritative source of Vedic literature that especially in this age, Kali Yuga, people are generally short-living, extremely bad in their habits, and inclined to accept methods of devotional service that are not bona fide, as we were previously discussing. Right? It means we are extremely bad in their habits, right? And then we identify with that and say, this is us, and then are inclined to accept methods of devotional service that are not bona fide because of that upadhi. Right? So it's just, Moreover, they are always disturbed by mental conditions, and they are mostly unfortunate. Under the circumstances, the performance of other processes, such as yajna, dana, tapa, and kriya, sacrifices, charity, and so on, are not at all possible. Therefore, it is recommended, Harinama, 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 Nama Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatir Anyata. In this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the only means of deliverance is chanting of the holy name of the Lord. There is no other way. There is no other way. There is no other way. Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila 17:21. Simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one advances perfectly in spiritual life. This is the best process for success in life. In other ages, the chanting of the holy name is equally powerful. But especially in this age, Kali Yuga is the most powerful. Right, so it's equally powerful. Like the other day, you know, we were discussing about the different ages. But the point is that all the chanting works in all four ages, because that's what you're doing. It's chanting with meditation, chanting with yajna, chanting with deity worship, and in this age, just chanting. Right? Means the other three are there, you know, and how much we are able to apply them and for their support. But especially in this age, Kali Yuga, it is most powerful. Kirtanad eva krishnasya mukta sangha param vrajet. Srimad Bhagavatam 12:351. Simply by chanting the holy name of Krishna, one is liberated and returns home back to Godhead. Therefore, even if one is able to perform other processes of devotional service, one must adopt the chanting of the holy name as the principal method of advancing in spiritual life. Yajyai Sankirtana Prayer Yajantihi Sumeda Saha. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:532. Those who are very sharp in their intelligence should adopt this process of chanting the holy names of the Lord. One should not, however, manufacture different types of chanting. One should adhere seriously to the chanting of the holy name as recommended in the scriptures. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Right, so as recommended means we don't make up our own mantras like that, because that was very popular like 100, 150 years ago. They make up their own mantras. Till today, people like to do that. So we just don't do that. While chanting the holy name of the Lord, one should be careful to avoid 10 offenses. From Sanat Kumara, it is understood that even if a person is a severe offender in many ways, he is freed from offensive life if he takes shelter of the Lord's holy name. Indeed, even if a human being is no better than a two-legged animal, he will be liberated if he takes shelter of the holy name of the Lord. One should therefore be very careful not to commit offenses at the lotus feet of the Lord's holy name. The offenses are described as follows. A. To blaspheming a devotee, especially a devotee engaged in broadcasting the glories of the holy name. B. To consider the name of Lord Shiva or any other demigod to be equally as powerful as the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No one is equal to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, nor is anyone superior to him. C. To disobey the instructions of the spiritual master. D. To blaspheme the Vedic literatures and literatures compiled in pursuance of the Vedic literatures. E. To comment that the glories of the holy name of the Lord are exaggerated. F. To interpret the holy name in a deviant way. G. To commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting the holy name. H. To compare the chanting of the holy name to pious activities. I. To instruct the glories of the holy name to a person who has no understanding of the chanting of the holy name. J. Not to awaken in transcendental attachment for the chanting of the holy name, even after hearing all these scriptural injunctions.
Mm-hmm.
And so we hear all this, we should then want to do that.
Yes.
You know, whether we're successful, that's another thing, but we want to. So that's the point. Then we're avoiding this.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way to atone for any of these offenses, right? We see Haridas Thakur just showed that if you are careful about what you're doing, associating with devotees or other things like this, then you can, you know, how you say, adjust the position and progress. But there's no atonement. Does that make sense? It is therefore recommended that an offender at the feet of the holy name continue to chant the holy name 24 hours a day. Right? So there's no atonement for chanting the holy name in an offensive way. The only thing to do is continue chanting. Right? If one thinks, oh, I'm so offensive, I shouldn't chant. No, the only way to get over those offenses is by chanting. Constant chanting of the holy name will make one free of offenses, and then he will gradually be elevated to the transcendental platform on which he can chant the pure holy name and thus become a lover of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is recommended that even if one commits offenses, one should continue chanting the holy name. In other words, the chanting of the holy name makes one offenseless. That's the only way. There's no other system to become offenseless other than chanting. So even though one begins chanting and there's offenses, there's no other process other than chanting to correct it. Right? So that's why we start with Nama Bas, then it goes into Shuddha Nam. Right? Does that make sense? In the book Nama Kaumudi, it is recommended if one is an offender at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, he should submit to that Vaishnava to be excused. Similarly, if one is an offender in chanting the holy name, he should submit to the holy name and thus be freed from his offenses. In this connection, there's the following statement, spoken by Daksha to Lord Shiva. I did not know the glories of your personality, and therefore I committed an offense at your lotus feet. In the open assembly. You are so kind, however, that you did not accept my offense. Instead, when I was falling down because of accusing you, you saved me by your merciful glance. You are most great. Kindly excuse me and be satisfied with your own exalted qualities. Right, so he's making the point is he hasn't developed those qualities. So it's only by him being satisfied with his own and that, you know, he's appreciating that. Then he's able to, then Daksha is able to be freed from his offense. One should be very humble and meek to offer one's desires and chant prayers composed in glorification of the holy name, such as Ayimukta Kuleru Pasimanam and Nivritta Tarsheru Pagimanad. One should, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.1.4. One should chant such prayers to become free from offenses at the lotus feet of the holy name. Smartanam. Number 3. After one regularly performs the process of hearing and chanting, and after the core of one's heart is cleansed, Smaranam, remembering, is recommended. In Srimad Bhagavatam 2.1.11, Sukadev Goswami tells King Parikit, Etan nirvidyamananam ichatam akuto bhayam yoginam nripa nirnitam harir nam manukirtanam. O King, for great yogis who have completely renounced all material connections, for those who desire all material enjoyment, and for those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord is recommended. According to different relationships with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there are varieties of Namanukirtanam, chanting of the holy name, and thus according to different relationships and mellows, there are five kinds of remembering. These are as follows. A. Conducting research into the worship of a particular form of the Lord. B. Concentrating the mind on one subject and withdrawing the mind's activities of thinking, feeling, and willing from all other subjects. C. Concentrating upon a particular form of the Lord. This is called meditation. D. Concentrating the mind continuously on the form of the Lord. This is called Dhruvanusmriti, or perfect meditation. And E. Awakening a likening for concentration upon a particular form. This is called samadhi or trance. Okay, so it's giving these five different levels that are there. So again, you see, it goes on by the name, the form, the qualities, the pastimes, like that. Mental concentration upon particular pastimes of the Lord in particular circumstances is also called remembrance. Therefore, samadhi, trance, can be possible in five different ways in terms of one's relationship. Specifically, the trance of devotees on the stage of neutrality is called mental concentration. Right? So, it means all the different levels that one's at, one deals with all these five, and so then what they're dealing with, what they're meditating on, and all that. But as we see, it starts from hearing, right? Hearing, then chanting. That's what will bring one to this remembrance. Padasevanam. 4. According to one's taste and strength, hearing, chanting, and remembrance may be followed by padasevanam. One obtains the perfection of remembering when one constantly thinks of the lotus feet of the Lord. Being intensely attached to thinking of the Lord's lotus feet is called padasevanam. When one is particularly adherent to the process of padasevanam, this process gradually includes other processes, such as seeing the form of the Lord, touching the form of the Lord, circumambulating the form or temple of the Lord, visiting such places as Jagannath Puri, Dwarka, and Mathura to see the Lord's form, and bathing in the Ganges or Jamuna. Bathing in the Ganges and serving a pure Vaishnava are also known as Tadiya Upasanam. This is also padasevanam. So it's the Lord, anything connected with Him, and anything connected with whatever's connected with Him. The word Tadiya means in relation with the Lord. Service to the Vaishnav, Tulsi, Ganges, and Jamuna are included in padasevanam. All these processes of padasevanam help one advance in spiritual life very quickly. Mm-hmm. Right. So we see is that so then archanam, it will also include these, because you perform the deity worship of the deity, so that means that you're doing all these things in connection with the deity. Seeing the deity, touching the deity, circumambulating the deity. You're living in the place where the deity is, so then that's the Dham. You're worshipping Tulsi, you're worshipping the Vaishnavas. They're all part of the deity worship process. Mm-hmm. That it's not complete without these. If one just does the technical worship, but not these, it's not considered as complete. So, in Archanam we can say, you can just do one. Archanam already includes that. It already includes hearing, chanting. That's what we were saying. Any one of them includes the other ones. It's just where the focus is. Yeah. You know, it's just like, Archanam. After padasevanam comes the process of archanam, worship of the deity. If one is interested in the process of archanam, one must positively take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and learn the process from him. Positively take shelter. Right? There are many books for archana, especially Narada Pancharatra. In this age, the Pancharatra system is particularly recommended for archana, deity worship. Right? Because we won't use Vaikanas or Tantra, these other, because we just don't have those qualifications. Because in the Vaikanas, then everything's that rituals will be simple, but if everything's with Vedic mantra, and it'll have to have that standard and that speed, how it moves, you know, just to know all that, to have that patience, to be that regulated then you can't do. And then the tantra, it's uses, we uses all the bead syllables and everything like that, but it has very complex, all the mudras and this and that. It's very complicated. Does that make sense? So Pancharatra is those Vedic elements and those tantric elements that are easily, you know, pleasantly applied, that are focused specifically on the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? Because when you use Vedic mantras, they're not as direct as means they do mean about the Lord, but the wording of them, you can see, is you have to know something to appreciate how they're directly about the Lord. In this age, the Pancharatra system is particularly recommended for archana, deity worship. There are two systems of archana, the Bhagavat system and the Pancharatriki system. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is no recommendation of Pancharatriki worship because in this Kali Yuga, even without deity worship, everything can be perfectly performed simply through hearing, chanting, remembering, and worship of the lotus feet of the Lord, Rupa Goswami states. Because it's only discussing the Bhagavat system. Like that. It mentions in there, it has a chapter in the 11th canto about worshipping the deity. But the point is that the mood should just be that of the Bhagavad. Sri Rupa Goswami states, Sri Vishnu Shravane Parikshit Abhavad Vayas Sakhi Kirtane. Parikamars attained salvation simply by hearing, and Sukadev Goswami attained salvation simply by chanting. Kaladmars attained salvation by remembering the Lord. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, attained perfection by worshipping the Lord's lotus feet. Pritamars attained salvation by worshipping the deity of the Lord. Akura attained salvation by offering prayers. Hanuman by rendering service. Arjuna by establishing friendship with the Lord. And Balimars by offering everything to the service of the Lord. All these great devotees served the Lord according to a particular process. But every one of them attained salvation and became eligible to return home back to Godhead. This is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. It is therefore... Yes?
When you say Arjuna, friendship is which Arjuna? It is Arjuna the Gita?
Yes. Yeah, Arjuna the Gita. It is therefore recommended that initiated devotees follow the principles of Narada Pancharatra. Did I read this as explained in Srimad Bhagavatam?
Yes.
Okay. It is therefore recommended that initiated devotees follow the principles of Narada Pancharatra by worshipping the deity in the temple, especially for householder devotees who are opulent in material possessions. Right? The path of deity worship is strongly recommended. Because right? They have so many things, then they can offer all those nice things to the Lord. But if they don't have much facility, then, you know, if they can take advantage of the temple, worship and that, then they can go in and get that benefit. If not, then they can do something simple in their house. An opulent householder devotee who does not engage his hard-earned money in the service of the Lord is called a miser. One should not engage paid brahmas to worship the deity, right? So he may get it. No, you do it yourself. If one does not personally worship the deity but engages paid servants instead, he is considered lazy, and his worship of the deity is called artificial. Okay, so he's spending money, so he's not a miser, right? But he's artificial. An opulent householder can collect, you know, it's just like, it's just there's certain things that you do, right? And so this is one of them. Servants do so many things in the house, right? They can pick up all those socks that are, whose socks are these, you know? But worship of the deity, that's done by, you know, the members of the household. An opulent householder can collect luxurious paraphernalia for deity worship, and consequently for householder devotees, the worship of the deity is compulsory. Right? So he says here, it's, you know, like that. Especially for, and then he says here, it's compulsory. In our Krishna conscious movement, there are brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanaprasthas, and sannyasis. But the deity worship in the temple should be performed especially by the householders. The brahmacharis can go with the sannyasis to preach, and the vanaprasthas should prepare themselves for the next status of renounced life, sannyas. Grihastha devotees, however, are generally engaged in material activities, and therefore, if they do not take to deity worship, their falling down is positively assured. But you know, you don't have to worry; it's guaranteed. Like that, you know. So it's like Rupa Goswami is using the opposite for the Prabhupada here is using the opposite. Right? Deity worship means following the rules and regulations precisely, because that's the thing, that brahmacharis, grihastha, vanaprasthas, they generally have simple rules, they generally stick to those. Grihastha then has this wide range of facilities, so they have a tendency to not follow the rules, so that's why then the deity worship regulates the life. That will keep one steady in devotional service. Generally, householders have children, and then the wives of the householders should be engaged in caring for the children, just as women acting as teachers care for the children in a nursery school. Grihastha devotees must adopt the archanditi, or deity worship, according to the suitable arrangements and directions given by the spiritual master. Grihastha devotees must adopt the archanditi, or deity worship, according to the suitable arrangements and directions given by the spiritual master. Regarding those unable to take to the deity worship in the temple, there's the following statement in the Agni Purana. Any householder devotee circumstantially unable to worship the deity must at least see the deity worship, and in this way he may achieve success also. Because if you don't, let's say, perform the Mangalarti, you just see it, you get the same benefit. Right? So that's the thing. If you see the worship, then you get that benefit. So that's why then you come Mangal Arti, then there's the darshan, the worship of Tulsi, worship of the spiritual master, the chanting, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, right? You know, worship of the Sringadev. So all these are all there. So by taking part in that temple program, you get that full benefit. The special purpose of deity worship is to keep oneself always pure and clean. That's the whole idea. Grihastha devotees should be actual examples of cleanliness. Because right, they're the ones that should be clean. Brahmacharis may still be learning. Some are good at it. Some still have a bit to learn. Like that. You know? And then vanaprastha and nyasi should naturally know. Deity worship should be continued along with hearing and chanting. Therefore, every mantra is preceded by the word nama. In all the mantras, there are specific potencies of which the grihastha devotees must take advantage. There are many mantras preceded by the word nama. But if one chants the holy name of the Lord, he receives the results of chanting namaha many times. By chanting the holy name of the Lord, one can reach the platform of love of Godhead. One might ask, then what is the necessity of being initiated? The answer is that even though the chanting of the holy name is sufficient to enable one to progress in spiritual life to the standard of love of Godhead, one is nonetheless susceptible to contamination because of possessing a material body. Consequently, special stress is given to the archanditi. One should therefore regularly take advantage of both the Bhagavat process and the Panchartriki process. Right? Mm-hmm. So that's what we're doing. We're chanting the holy name and we're worshipping the deity. So these two go together. Prabhupada said like two rails on a train. Right? They go together. Because we have the possess a material body. If you're in a spiritual body, and you ask the question, "Well, do I need to be engaged in in these technical points of deity worship? Do I need to have initiation?" If you're already liberated on the platform of Baba, then maybe not. But unless you're on that platform, then yes, you do. You know, if you come here in your spiritual body, my Prabhupada is saying is that the Lord, when he comes, he brings his associates. And so then they'll come with the Lord. You know, he's in his spiritual body there and theirs. And then after performing their activities here, they go back in their spiritual body. Like that. So they're in a different category. But if you have a material body, then this applies to us. Deity worship has two divisions, namely pure and mixed with fruitive activities. For one who is steady, deity worship is compulsory. Observing the various types of festivals such as Sri Janmashtami, Ram Navami, and Nrisingha Chaturthi is also included in the process of deity worship. In other words, it is compulsory for householder devotees to observe these festivals. Okay, so one has to take part in the worship, observe the festivals. All these things then make something happen in life. Because we have to remember is that there's a good chance that before becoming devotees, we were not necessarily, you know, nicely trained brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanaprasthas, or sannyasis, right? We were most likely just, you know, moving in the householder scene. And moving in that scene where it doesn't necessarily have all this regulation and everything like this, we were not satisfied. Not being satisfied, we came forward into Krishna consciousness. Right? Something sense. Like that. So that's the whole point, is that regulation is the reason it's there. Because if we go back to the unregulation, it didn't work before, why will it work now? Something sense. And if you say, no, but we're chanting Hare Krishna, that's enough, that's okay, but what about possessing the material body and susceptible to contamination because of that? How do we address that? So that is the regulation in dealing with it. Because our lifestyle, what regulates us, our whole lifestyle, it's a pancharatric lifestyle. But the focus, the activities we perform are the Bhagavad, the chanting, and the preaching. But our lifestyle, the technical schedule and why we go get up when we do, go to bed when we do, do the things we do, that's all discussed in Pancharatra. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.